Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, September 12th. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And please note that our shows will also be archived on DrSaputo.com.
You'll hear Vicky's 2020 tips today at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got another really good show for you today that's going to include, is Obama backtracking on the smog plan and bowing to big business?
And what's the prevalence of mental illness?
And over-the-counter painkillers can do more than double the risk of miscarriages.
And shouldn't the results of clinical trials to the public be mandatory? And much, much more. Plus, if you want to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Before we get into talking about Obama and how he's backtracking on our smog plan, bowing to big business, I wanted to read a little sort of a story poem from one of our listeners. And her name starts with P.
Okay.
I'm like Chicken Little, running around like a chicken with my head cut off, working to warn people who don't want to listen or believe me that the sky is actually falling. Yes, unfortunately, it's true. The sky is falling with dripping, polluting, toxic chemtrails.
Uh-oh.
On our earth and on humanity and wildlife. So let's begin a campaign to stop all chemical spraying. Let's imagine our planet without chemtrails, agricultural spraying, bug spraying. Plus, we could use all that wasted covert money to improve our economy and have extra money left over for alternative medicine and nutrition and honest, meaningful education. Well, here's a question for you. How is it that while those in power say that our country is broke, our government is still able to afford to constantly spray us almost daily with chemtrails while warmongering in other countries? They are chemical spray mongers. They are addicted to spraying chemicals on us, and they love to feed us chemicals. Like the expression, they treat us like mushrooms. They keep us in the dark and put fertilizer on us.
That's great.
And this was from Chicken Little P. You know, no wonder our healthcare system isn't working. I mean, how can we keep up with all the diseases that we're causing from polluting our planet?
You know, you really bring up some good issues here, Vicky. I mean, what's happening with these chemtrails that are out there? The government doesn't even acknowledge that it's happening, but there's so much written about it. If you go to the internet and start reading about it, it's mind-boggling. It's some of the stuff is just like it is. So we have to start taking some kind of action if we want to stop things that we think are like that. If you want to get more information about things like that, listen to Coast to Coast, you know, with George Norrie, or listen to Alex Jones on Prison Planet. They're talking about stuff like this all the time, and it sounds so much like it's conspiratorial that nobody wants to own up to it. There are a few people on the show, for sure, that own up to it, and they talk a very intelligent game about it. It's just amazing to me that there are so many things like this that are happening that are like big cover-ups.
And, you know, also, during 9/11 and because of 9/11, there were a lot of people that were really afraid that a lot of the big chemical plants, mm-hmm. you know, like Dow Chemical, for example,
sure.
and Bayer, and I don't know the names of all the other ones, but a lot of people and environmentalists were really worried that they might be a target for terrorism. And, you know, over the last 10 years that they've had to do something about it, they've really done very little to protect us.
There may be a reason for that. You know, I start to get very suspicious when I read about 9/11. You can go to the Internet to multiple sites. It's not like there's just one site there. There are multiple sites that are talking about the conspiratorial theories again. And I'm wondering why, you know, why don't we have a strong enough public that's able to force a true exploration into what really happened in 9/11.
Like what happened with that movie about Kennedy.
Sure, JFK. Yeah, all that business too. And that's all parked at some place where we're not going to get to it until the year 2025, and then I wonder how much of it will actually be accurate. So when we're looking at stuff like this, it's a little bit scary. And yet, if you don't open your mind to it and think about it, I mean, look at what we saw on TV yesterday, you know, on 9/11. What we saw is a lot of tear-jerking stuff. It's absolutely right. I mean, people were killed. They were murdered by whoever did what this was about. And yet, when you look at the whole story and try and put it together, it's a little frightening because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense and the way it happened and how the buildings fell. And you read about some of the scientific data that says it couldn't happen the way that it did, and yet it did. And yet you talk to people on CNN or on Fox or some of the big news stations, and it's just a given that this was done by Osama bin Laden, and that's it. And so you try to challenge it, and it's like it just like putting out nobody's going to listen to you. So I think we need to think for ourselves, and it's not un-American to think for yourself. Fact is, it's very American to think for yourself. In fact, you must if you want to see America cleaned up.
Well, you know, one of the things that we're going to be talking about now is about how Obama has backtracked on this smog plan, bowing to big business, mm-hmm. because so much of this is political, and this is one of the things that we really want to expose here, because during the elections, you know, Obama wanted health care reform, and he talked about his mother's health, and Michelle is heading this movement to encourage good health in kids by eating healthy and to reduce obesity, and she's planted the vegetable garden and so forth. So is Obama selling out public health to environmental pollution from mostly the power plants and the factories, from the pressure of big business like Dow Chemical and some of the others saying that it would cost thousands of jobs and $90 billion from corporate America? And he's like, oh, well, we'll just do it until the year 2013. But it really looks like he's crumbled under the pressure, and he stopped these new rules to limit this smog pollution.
Well, what would you expect, Vicki? I mean, here's a guy who I still have faith in, who I'll vote for the next election, because I think he's the man to vote for. But I also understand politics to an extent and realize that an awful lot of what happens is because of deals that are made. You know, there's a deal made, I'll vote for this if you'll vote for that, and it's almost like they're trades. And maybe what Obama's thinking is that he really wants to be elected in 2012. And so he's got to prepare for that. He's
okay,
got to
have
the corporate sponsors for it.
I have a lot to say about that.
Well, you're being logical. And there's a place for logic because the American people are getting shortchanged. But it's the system of how politics works and business works
in
this country.
Well, we need to do something to change it then, because if we're saving $90 billion for chemical corporations and we're spending $100 billion in health costs and mm-hmm. causing 12,000 premature deaths and putting 37 million children who are the most vulnerable at risk before the bill comes up again in 2013, to me, this is economic extravagance and it's murder. I mean, keeping in mind that reducing pollution can also create jobs in enforcing it. So this is, to me, a bunch of hogwash talking about how it's going to cost all these jobs and cost all this money.
Well, see, there you go, being logical again. You're exactly right. That is what happened. And it is a travesty that it happened. And it shouldn't be like that here in America. It should be straightforward. Politics and business should be transparent. The American people have every right to know how the money's spent. And yet we don't see that because it doesn't exist that way. Why do you think that all the problems that we're seeing with environmental challenges at ground zero, you know, in New York are like they are? Why aren't the people who are the firefighters and the policemen getting reimbursed for a lot of their illnesses that they got as a consequence of being exposed to all that bad smoke, which, by the way, was touted not to be a problem? I still remember listening on TV while the mayor of New York was talking about, oh, it's not a problem. You don't have to be concerned about it.
I know. We talked about it on our Prescriptions for Health show at the time.
That was 10 years ago we were talking about
but
that
how
thing. It's a joke.
How ridiculous that is. Even common sense would show you that that would be dangerous.
But see, business and politics isn't about common sense. It's about getting what you want. It's about money and it's about power. And if you want to play ball with the big boys, you're going to have to play ball and do some things that you don't want to do, because the status quo, people will spend billions and trillions of dollars to keep. They want this country just like it is. They want it to be able to continue with the corruptness that it has in order to keep the status quo in power like it is. But that's wrong.
But I think this is one of the good reasons why it's a good idea to elect new officials each election instead of the same ones, because when you have the same ones, those are the ones that are already being bought out.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a lovely thought. And again, I look at your big blue eyes as you're saying stuff like that and thinking, she's right. We need to do something that's different. But the different thing that we need to do isn't trying to play by the old system and try harder. It's about playing with a new system, with new ground rules and with new values. And those new values are basically that we need to be the change we want to see. We need to evolve to the next highest level of consciousness that we're stuck below, and do something to try and make the change you want to see by being that change yourself. And the problem is that nobody really thinks that that works. What can I do to make a change?
Well, it has to start with each individual.
Well, if it doesn't, if you don't start there, there's nowhere else to start.
And being a good person and being honest and so on like that. You know, it's like, do you care about the future of your mm-hmm. children or your grandchildren? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you don't. Maybe you just figure you're very self-centered and think, well, it's all about me and money. And
well,
I don't care about my children and my grandchildren.
That's how we've evolved today. And we haven't really, when I say evolved, that's the wrong word. We've re-evolved. We've had revolution after revolution. We've had government people after government people come and go, because we get rid of them when we find out how corrupt they really are. And then new people come along in the same system, and they do the same old thing after a year or two of being in Washington, D.C. That's not okay. And that doesn't make for change. That makes for revolution after revolution. If you want to make a change, it's meaningful, you have to evolve. That
well,
means
we
you have to change your value
love,
system.
Because then it's
That's right. Now you're talking about major shifts, and we're all there. I mean, look at the responses on TV yesterday of all the heartbroken people with tears in their eyes and love in their hearts telling their stories about what happened, watching people jump out of buildings. I mean, it's unbelievable how we connect with that in such a positive way. We have the ability to make the evolutionary change. We don't have the wisdom or confidence, and that's where we really need to do something that's different than usual. I'm wondering what our listeners think. What do you think is the change we need to make? Should it be that we should be getting together with militia at the, you know, at the grassroots level and overthrowing government? Should we be going to church more often? Should we be doing things that will help us to have more goodness in our heart?
Well, what about having some news that's happy news once in a while instead of everything that's negative?
Wouldn't that be a shift? I mean, a happy news newspaper that talks about that there's a county fair today and that the food was good and that people had a good time and they were singing and they were dancing. Where do you see that kind of news?
Because, you know, a lot of times what this does is it stirs up post-traumatic stress disorder in people.
Yes, it does.
And, you know, which brings us really to our next topic here about mental illness, because we mm-hmm. have an overwhelming amount of mental illness. I mean, Europe, they did a study that showed 40% of them had mental illness. But have you ever noticed all the meds advertised on TV for mental disorders? Everything from depression and anxiety to insomnia and addiction and all that.
I have a list of the top five therapies that were treated, okay, by the World Pharmaceutical Market Summary. And the drug that's in number one place, cholesterol regulation. Number two, anti-ulcerants, things like Prilosec. Number three, antidepressants and mood stabilizers. Number four, antipsychotics. You're talking about three and four. The number three and number four drugs sold in the world are for antidepression and antipsychosis. So are only 40% of us really having problems with mental illness?
And is it because we have a deficiency of Prozac?
I don't think it's that. It's because we have an excess of stress. It's because we don't have the tools when we're kids to be able to deal with the traumas that we're faced with by dysfunctional families that are having so much in the way of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. When you see 10, 15, 20% of America suffering from PTSD, from physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, that's an enormous number. How many of us are really in good mental health? Who feels good about how their life is really running? Who feels happy with the way the government is dealing with things? Who's elated about the way that we're dealing with the challenges that we see around the world or even on our own streets, like here in San Francisco?
Well, see, I think that depression can be contagious. You know, when somebody's down, it kind of like brings other people down around them. And when you're watching TV and they're, you know, telling you about negative things, I mean, we know that mental illness, it's a major cause of disease and death and accidents and lack of sleep and taking too many drugs to try to feel better, and it's expensive. And to go see a psychiatrist is way expensive, or a psychologist.
So what are we talking about when we say mental illness? What does that mean? Does that mean that you have to be a little crazy?
Does it mean that our society is messed up and that we're not getting, we have unmet needs starting from childhood?
That's really absolutely right. And I think that's universal. It's not like anybody has got it all together. I mean, what families do you know that have it all together? The wealthy, certainly not. I mean, for the most part, they've got the problems that come with their excessive amount of money. They have to take care of it and protect it, at least that's what they think, rather than be philanthropists, although there are certainly notable exceptions to that. These are all things that weigh into how you look at what does it take to be happy, have a life that's fruitful, to have a meaningful purpose that keeps you excited about what you're doing. What does it take to get that? Do we learn it in school?
Well,
do we learn it in our families? Where do we get it?
I think there are so few families that are left together anymore. I mean, when we were kids, divorce wasn't as prominent as it is now. I mean,
no.
We watch these TV shows, you know, like Leave It to Beaver and Ozzy and Harriet.
Right.
And
Father Knows Best.
Yeah. And all those kind of shows, because it was the real family was together. And then became what? The Brady Bunch.
Right.
We're mixing families. But, you know, we've got all these split divorced families and dysfunctional families.
Well, there's
a lot of
reason
people
for it.
Getting married.
See, there's a reason for it, but we don't do anything more than treat the symptoms most of the time. So, here, let's balance your neurotransmitters so you don't feel so bad. Try this SSRI antidepressant, which, by the way, doesn't do very much, but it works like a placebo.
Your kids having problems and they're a little active and they're not focusing in school, so let's give them amphetamine.
Yeah, take this ADD drug or ADHD drug. We rely too much on suppressing symptoms and too little on going after the cause of what's wrong. That's why I keep coming back, and Vicky too, about how we have to evolve to a higher level of consciousness, to a place where we feel right contributing and giving and loving, rather than trying to take care of our own narcissistic needs as the number one thing.
Because giving to others is really giving to yourself.
Yeah, of course it is.
The best way to feel good is to do something nice for somebody else.
All right, so if you want to solve the problem of the mental illness that's in this country, the change can start just with you, with an understanding that the power's in your hands. Listen to your children. Care about them. Leave space for them so that they can be heard. Guide them for sure, because they need guidance. But let's get away from all this abuse that's going on. Let's do something to change the way our values are geared towards money and power.
Well, parenthood is probably about the most important job a person can have.
That's why teachers are so important.
You're helping to mold and to create the life of a human being. Not that they're not already a human being, but as they grow into adulthood, because they're going to take whatever dysfunction it is that they're experiencing as a child, they're going to take it with them.
Well, that's right. So you have to teach them values. It's really important to teach your kid values that are good values so they can be good people and live in community and be an important part of it, and so that they can take that to a higher level and maybe bring that into the business and politics and medicine and law, all the categories and segments of our culture that are stuck where they are.
And instead of being so busy in our lives and brushing children away, sometimes we need to really listen and let them know how much we care, what they think and feel.
All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicky. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have an opinion about what we're talking about or a story you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicky's first 2020 tip.
have some clever definitions, and I think it's a good idea to have a little bit of chuckle and laughter in our lives, because laughter is the best medicine, and we just got through talking about a lot of depressive
things. We don't get enough of it. You're right.
So here's a definition of an adult: a person who stopped growing at both ends and is now growing in the middle.
Oh, my gosh. That's so true, isn't it?
Chickens, those are the only animals that you eat before they're born and after they're dead.
Oh, jeez. Who thought of that one?
This one sounds like the definition was made up by a child that says, dust is mud with the juice squeezed out.
That's a child, all right.
And an egotist, someone who's usually knee-deep in conversation.
Knee-deep, you're right.
Handkerchief, cold storage.
All right.
Inflation, cutting money in half without damaging the paper. A mosquito is an insect that makes you like flies better.
For sure.
A raisin is a grape with a sunburn. A secret is something you tell to one person at a time.
Isn't that the truth?
A toothache, the pain that drives you to extraction.
Oh, dear.
Tomorrow, one of the greatest labor-saving devices of today is tomorrow.
Indeed.
And yawn, an honest opinion openly expressed. And last but not least is wrinkles, something that other people have similar to my character lines.
There you go. Isn't that right? All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
You know, we often tout the dangers of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, also known as NSAIDs. Things like Advil, Aleve, Motrin, ibuprofen, those drugs, Celebrex, so forth. Well, I want you to really think about these numbers now, especially in lieu of what we just went through yesterday with 9/11, because
Indeed.
There are 300,000 hospitalizations a year and 30,000 deaths a year just from the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs alone. Now, yesterday we were grieving and mourning from 10 years ago anniversary of 9/11, where less than 3,000 were killed.
Right.
Now, that's traumatic and it's upsetting, and that's 3,000, and we're talking
10
times as many deaths.
And that was just in 1 year. If you look at it over 10 years, it's 300,000 deaths and it's 3 million hospitalizations just for this category of drugs. And we sit back looking at that, thinking, well, what are we supposed to do? We have to have something for pain, don't we? Well, I mean, there are ways to deal with pain besides using drugs that cause all this mayhem. And to accept that is an okay thing. I mean, I remember when I was debating this topic with Dr. Dean Adel a few years ago on the Gene Burns show. And Gene raised himself. He says, well, what do we do if we have to, if we're going to
pain?
Yeah, we have to do something, don't we? I said, yeah. And he says, well, maybe that's a necessary risk to take. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you talk to those 300,000 people this year that were in the hospital because of it and the 30,000 people that died because of using this particular class of pain
medicines? Talk to their families. You can't talk to them because they're gone.
That's right. So you're basically, I mean, he was quiet after that. Of course, Dean Adel had nothing much to add to it.
Well, you know, when we say that there are other things that people can try. First of all, you need to try to figure out what the cause of the pain is, whether if it's a headache, if it's stress, if it's tension in your neck or your shoulder. Sometimes that can cause a headache because many times we have referred pain.
Sure.
You might have a stomach ache because you're upset about something.
Sure.
You're feeling stressed.
Right. So you're going to go take your Pepcid AC? I mean, is that the answer to that?
Well, or are you going to take your anti-anxiety drug or your antidepressant or something?
Or your sleeping pills,
you see,
right.
There are things that people can do as a part of their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, acupuncture, for one thing, can be very effective for pain. I mean,
Indeed.
People have even had surgeries, major surgeries, with only acupuncture and no general anesthesia.
Isn't that an amazing
anesthesia
thing that you think would catch on? Why don't our anesthesiologists pick up on that even today? That was in about 1970 when we learned about that, and all these videos came over when Nixon was in China showing us how acupuncture was such an effective form of anesthesia during general surgery. I mean, to me, that's stunning, but it's even more stunning that it never took off because we're stuck in the same paradigm we were in at that time, oh, you got to use a drug. You can't take a chance. And there are problems with the drugs. There are dangers from anesthesia. There are people who die from things like that, and people who lose.
Even from spinal anesthesia.
I can tell you a story about that another time. That's right. So it's not a small thing, and it's something that we have to be aware of.
Well, the other thing is, too, is chiropractic can be very effective. And, you know, we're all connected. So I had my atlas adjusted that's way up
the very
the top
joint, the first vertebrae and the skull.
Yeah, so it's on top of your neck.
Just a little tiny little piece of bone.
And I had that adjusted, and do you know that not only helped my neck, it got rid of my sciatic type pain that I was having, mm-hmm. because I'd had it for months and months and months, and I'd had chiropractic adjustments. But isn't that interesting that something at the very top of my spine could correct something that was at the base of my spine?
Well, like you said, the body is all connected, and all you have to do is have a misalignment in one place, like in your jaw, that can affect your neck, that can affect your upper back, that can affect your lower back, that can affect your hips and knees and feet. I've seen people go to surgery for ruptured discs that was related to a TMJ problem. And that's a real shame, because what we tend to do in medicine, we go to the place where we see the problem, and then we tend to focus on that. So, yeah, replace the hip, replace the knee, replace whatever you can to make the thing go away. And we haven't really looked at what the underlying issue was to begin with.
Well, just think of that old song, you know, the
knee bone.
The hip bone's connected to the leg bone, the leg bone's connected to the knee bone, the
that's
knee
right.
bone's connected to the, you know, ankle
that's,
bone
that's
and all
right.
that stuff.
That's right.
And so it's really true. So anyway, you might consider chiropractic even for a headache, because they can be very effective for
especially
headaches.
Especially for a headache, yeah.
Many times the pain from a headache is referred from the neck.
Lots of studies done on that, and, you know, just as a little aside, when we use our infrared light therapy, the photonic stimulator, on people with headaches or TMJ headaches, it's usually about 5 minutes it takes to make the pain go away 100% unless you have a really severe problem with what's going on. So we're apt to try that. But like you said, there's acupuncture, there's chiropractic, there's body work. There's infrared light therapy. There's DMSO.
There's
so many ways.
There's Reiki. There's,
yeah. And
the list goes on. There's plenty of choices.
And how often
there's
is it stress?
DMSO.
How about it, even if it's caused by stress? Who thinks about dealing with that? You know, stress can put you
all the way
out. Well,
that's when people pop the pill.
Well, that's right, because they don't want to deal with how that feels. And we've got a culture now that's been brainwashed into thinking that if there's a pill out there, and it can help what I've got, I want to try it, even though listening to the last half of that direct-to-consumer ad scares the bejesus out of you.
Okay, so now, the point that I was really trying to get at with about these common painkillers, the NSAIDs, besides causing bleeding and ulcers and heart attacks and strokes and GI perforations and atrial fibrillation and kidney failure, now they've shown that they can cause miscarriages over twice as many, so it's over doubles the risk if you take an NSAID after conception. And many women don't know that they're pregnant when they take the pill. They might have a headache or something.
You are so right. And we want instant relief from whatever it is that we have without having to work for to solve the underlying problem. That's just outright naiveness.
And if you are pregnant, and you know you're pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to take medications anyway.
You'd be silly to take anything, because sometimes we find out 50 years later that a drug wasn't healthy. I mean, look at the Darvon story, which we talk about so often. You know, that drug is now off the market. But when I first went to medical school back in the mid-60s, Darvon was the cat's meow. And we used it ever since the mid-60s until about 2010.
I used to take it all the time for menstrual cramps, but it never helped them anyway.
Well, now what we're finding out is it caused fatal cardiac rhythm disturbances to the point where the FDA took it off the market. That took over 50 years to happen. So how safe do you think any drug is?
Well, that also happened with a couple of antihistamines, the Hisminol and the Selvane. Those were taken off the market for the same kind of thing.
You're right. Well, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We'll be back taking your calls after a short station break.
Welcome to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. I think we have a call from David, who's been waiting for some time. David, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, Dr. Saputo?
Fine. Good to hear from you. What's happening?
Well, I want to get back onto the subject of 9/11 a little bit that you guys were talking about earlier, if that's okay.
Okay.
First of all, I want to send out my thoughts and prayers to the families of the victims that were murdered that day. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to get into a little bit about what might have happened there and what the official report is. It seems to me, and anybody that's logical that does any research on this, the 9/11 Commission report is just flat out full of holes and lies. And what happened that day is not what we're being told. And, you know, you got to put yourself in the perspective of the victims' families and how they must feel about this. And, you know, if you can put yourself in their shoes, and maybe try to think, at least just look at this. I mean, start looking at the picture of what happened, and question marks are going to be raised. I mean, if you want to start talking about changes in this country, that's the best place to start is there. And every citizen of this country should be taking a good, hard look at what actually happened there.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not the easiest thing to do, and it's almost considered un-American to talk about conspiracy theories. And as soon as you put out some kind of information that questions the ivory towers of the politics and how this country works,
it stirs people up and gets them angry.
Yeah, it does. And a lot of those are the people probably who just don't want to look at things the way they are. So
I think
you have a good point.
Well, that's a huge problem, and a lot of it starts with the media. But when you talk about political change and corruption and everything that's going on in this country and the direction that we're headed, it has to start somewhere. And
indeed,
this is the place that it needs to start. People need to start thinking for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could get this going at a grassroots level, which a lot of organizations are doing right now, mm-hmm. and get a new investigation on 9/11, not the 9/11 Commission report, a private-funded investigation, not by the politicians, but by the people, this thing can be broken open. And that's where your change in government and everything else in this country is going to start.
David, thanks for calling.
Great
I think you're
point.
Making a great point, and I think that I hope other people out there are listening, and I wonder what they think, too. Have a great day. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
You know, Canada wants the public disclosure of clinical trial results to be mandatory, and so do we. I mean, the public does have a right to know the results of these trials, and lack of available information puts us at risk. I mean, it's the same thing in this country as it is in Canada, and the public funds the research.
Yeah.
So if the public funds the research, it's our property, right?
It should be. I mean, if we pay for it, it should be ours. But, you know, it's business as usual. If you can make a buck doing something, do it, as long as you have a connection someplace that will support it. I mean, how in the world can you justify all the money spent at the National Institutes of Health by we the people to do the research? How can you justify that now that information becomes translated into journal articles like the New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of the American Medical Association, the British Medical Journal, et cetera, et cetera? How do you justify having to pay for it a second time? Why should the journals be in a place where they're making lots of money from that? Why do we have to have the conflicts of interest that go with the journals themselves?
In other words, we're paying twice if we want the information.
Plus, we're getting information that's what they select and what gets published. When you're looking at the data that's made or that's paid for by the pharmaceutical industry, that's a separate issue. We don't own that information, and if they want to publish it their own journals, that's okay. I like what the Institute of Medicine does when it starts publishing its own information in journals that are open to the public. That's what I think we should be doing. You know, we spend 10% of the gross national product in most countries like Germany and France and Sweden. And the U.S. spends closer to 18% of the gross national product, which is an immense amount of money. It's trillions. It's moving on to towards $3 trillion. That's immense. And to have to pay for things a second time, it's beyond belief. So I think that the people in Canada who are complaining that their journal articles should be paid for one time is right. But the thing they're really complaining about up in Canada is how are they going to lower costs? See, I don't think that universal health care or a single-payer system, however you want to look at that, is doing anything except delivering the same health care system that doesn't work to more people. And as you add more people, like 20 or 30 or 40 million people to that system, and not spend any more money on it, you're going to have a dilution of services, so they will be less available. The quality of care, which already sucks when you're looking at Medicaid and Medi-Cal, that's a recipe for disaster. Why is it that it's the poor people that are always the ones that are having the problems that they're having? It's because the rich take advantage of them. All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's last 2020 tip.
Well, this tip is called One Day at a Time.
A good idea.
So what's the most useless thing to do? Worry.
Yeah, that doesn't solve much, does it?
The greatest joy is giving. The greatest loss of self-respect.
Mm.
The most satisfying work is helping others. The ugliest personality trait, selfishness. The most endangered species, dedicated leaders. The greatest shot in the arm, encouragement. Mm. And the greatest problem to overcome is fear.
Indeed.
The most effective sleeping pill, peace of mind.
Right.
The most crippling failure disease is excuses. And the most powerful force in life is love. The most dangerous pariah, a gossiper. And the world's most incredible computer is the brain.
For sure.
The worst thing to be without, hope.
Mm.
The deadliest weapon, the tongue. The two most powerful filled words, I can. And the greatest asset is faith. The most worthless emotion is self-pity, and the most prized possession is integrity, and the most beautiful attire is a smile, and the most powerful channel of communication is prayer, and the most contagious spirit is enthusiasm.
For sure. Those are beautiful things. I don't know where you find all these things, but you're really right on. I think if we just listen to your 2020 tips, we get a lot out of these shows. Because you're talking about the value system that we really should be encouraging and adopting, the kind of system that maybe should be incorporated into our schools. We're so overfixed on reading, writing, and arithmetic that we forget about teaching our kids, you know, how to do things that are really geared to having them be able to be citizens who are responsible, who know why they're here, that know what their life is about, and how to be able to give and share and build community.
And not to be so much me, 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 and everything about, you know,
mm-hmm.
oneself.
All right. Well, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And I think we have a call from Harvey. Harvey, you there?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Len and Nurse Vicki.
How are you?
Great, and congratulations on your new show.
Well, thank you very much.
I like it very much. Comes in loud and clear.
Great.
The reason I'm calling is because my boss, who's a woman, she told me that her husband was diagnosed with ALS.
And so I
found out recently that they found the root cause of it. I was, you know, I started doing some Google searches looking for some answers. Mm-hmm. And I also found out that cannabis seems to help people with mm-hmm. that problem seems to relieve. It's all there on the Google. You can put in cannabis and ALS and all that. So that's all what I found. But I was wondering if you could, you knew any information that might help him.
Well, you know, when you get to the specifics of what causes ALS, nobody's really sure. We know that it's an autoimmune disease that causes nerve degeneration and usually is lethal in a matter of just a few years in most people.
It's also referred to as Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah, exactly.
Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
All right, Vicki, that's right. And I think there are things that we can do to calm down the autoimmune process. So what I like to do is see what I can do to specifically change the way the immune system reacts to things. Instead of having an imbalance where we're making too many antibodies, what I like to do is shift it so that it doesn't make so many antibodies, which is what causes autoimmunity, and make more T cells, which are able to defend the body quite well also. So there are a few ways to do that. One is we can load people up on vitamin D, and I very often, and this is not advice, this is information to discuss with your healthcare practitioner, we'll put people on as much as 50,000 or 100,000 or 150,000 units of vitamin D a day for a few weeks and see if anything changes. I might look for leaky gut syndrome, which may be where the permeability across the lining of the intestinal tract is increased substantially, and when the pores in the gut, which are what are involved in this process, become way too big, what happens is it lets in all kinds of big molecules that normally cannot get across the gut lining. And when they can't get across the gut, if the pores are big, it will let those things in massive amounts, and that can upset the stability of the immune system and stimulate the process of autoimmunity. So by doing a test to see if there's increased intestinal permeability, there are many things that can be done to try and correct that using nutritional approaches. The other thing is sometimes I'll look for delayed hypersensitivity reactions. There are many different ways of measuring that. One that I like a lot is Russ Jaffe's test from Serimmune. It's called the ELISA ACT test. And it's a way of identifying those substances that are in our body that are toxic to us, toxic for us, because of how the immune system reacts against them. And that sets the stage for all kinds of autoimmunity to develop like this. So while this isn't a cure, Harvey, this is something that might be able to support the return to more normal immunity. And I think there are other things that can be done as well. You know, we use infrared light therapy for people who have ALS who have pain. And while it's not an approved use by the FDA, we use it off-label and very often will help people with their stiffness, their weakness, and sometimes with their pain, and a lot of the time with their pain. So that's what I know about it, Harvey. I hope that helps you.
I appreciate it very much. And
thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
You have a great day.
I'll be listening.
Okay, bye-bye. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, we know that lifestyle and diet are key in preventing heart disease. And when you think of eating healthy, you probably don't think of eating dessert.
No, that doesn't come up first.
Yet the results of 5 out of 7 studies involving over 100,000 participants show that chocolate consumption significantly reduces cardiovascular disease,
mm-hmm.
Heart disease, stroke, cancer, premature aging.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, dark chocolate has other benefits as well.
It's a great antioxidant. It's an anti-inflammatory. It really tastes pretty good. But I got to tell you, eating truffles and bonbons isn't going to do it.
No, well, we're not talking about chocolate and candy.
No, but a lot of the time that's the message people take home. Ah, chocolate's good for you. Let's go have some bonbons, right?
But you know, chocolate powder doesn't taste so hot.
Cocoa powder tastes awful. I mean, it's real bitter. It's not the kind of thing you'd say, oh, let's have a snack of some cocoa beans. You're not going to want to go do that.
But you know, a little square of some dark chocolate, you know, that's organic dark chocolate, that's a healthy thing. And, you know, dark chocolate has benefits like lowering blood pressure mm-hmm. and your cholesterol.
Sure.
It raises the high cholesterol that you want to have, the HDL.
It boosts
and it lowers
HDL.
The LDL.
Mm-hmm.
And it can even work as a mild anticoagulant.
Mm-hmm.
It can make the blood vessels more elastic. It helps your blood sugar. I thought I was surprised.
Seems ironic, doesn't it?
It can boost your mood. It gives you more serotonin and endorphins, I guess.
Okay, so what's in chocolate, Vicki? You need to know what's in chocolate before we decide that it's really good for you. If you're just eating the dark chocolate, that's great. But if you're talking about the trans fats, the high fructose corn syrup, okay, all those things, you're talking about something that's absolutely toxic to the body and not a good idea. And as you move from dark chocolate to milk chocolate to white chocolate, you lose all the benefits of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought it was interesting, too, that if you eat milk chocolate or milk with the chocolate, it can cancel out the antioxidant effects of it.
Anything that tastes really good like that. And that's why articles like this are interesting. So when I look at, is chocolate really heart healthy? My answer overall would be no. I would say don't get caught up in it.
Well, if you eat too much of it, it could be bad for your heart.
That's the point. And most of us have a problem eating just one potato chip or just one milk dud, okay, or one thing that's got milk chocolate in it or even dark chocolate for a lot of people. So I would say I wouldn't go overboard on anything to excess.
So it's an occasional treat.
Yeah, that's
fine. Not to replace your fruits and vegetables. Maybe have a little dark chocolate fondue on your strawberries, because both those things are
they taste good and they're good for you, sure.
But, you know, I thought it was interesting, too, that there's tannin in chocolate. You know, usually we think of it in tea, but it might help to fight.
Listen, there are a lot of healthy things about most foods as long as you understand how they're processed. If it looks like a food, a strawberry or a zucchini or a cucumber, eat it because you know that's good food. If it comes in a cellophane package with an ingredients list with things that you can't pronounce, don't eat it. And most things with chocolate come in a package.
And so, if you only eat a square of chocolate or 30 calories of dark chocolate a day, you're not going to gain weight on that. But, like you said, it's tough to only eat one.
Well, don't buy a box of C's. Chocolate, okay, to try or candy to try and control your blood pressure. I'm afraid too many people get that idea from it. So my vote on it is don't eat anything to excess. Have a few things every day that taste really good that you like, but the bulk of your diet should be fruits and vegetables, seeds and nuts, herbs and spices. If you focus on that, you're going to have a healthy diet. And chances are you're going to be pretty healthy to follow.
Well, there's a company that has these chocolate balls that are really good.
Oh, they're delicious.
And they're loaded with herbs and things that are supposed to be healthy. But you're only supposed to eat three of them a day.
Oh, right. I remember you buying those things.
I had to quit buying them because I couldn't just eat three at a time.
Well, that's the problem. And they were really healthy based on what was in them.
Well, I don't know how healthy they were if you ate too many of them, though, because they said you were only supposed to eat three a day.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, it's hard to do when they taste so good. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And maybe that's the reason why I'm kind of opposed of using chocolate as a medicine, at least in large amounts.
Well, also, you know, the National Institutes of Health has been, you know, trying to revise the conflict of interest rules. And here's a step in the right direction regarding the National Institutes of Health revising these conflict of interest rules for medical researchers by at least lowering the amount of the money a researcher must disclose. So if they receive from an industry or held company stock up to $5,000 from about $10,000.
Look, what are they trying to tell you? What's the message of this article?
That every little bit helps, I guess.
Well, every little bit more that you put into it that has conflict of interest makes it that much worse. But you shouldn't have any conflicts of interest at all.
No.
You want science? Take the conflicts of interest out. Why? Because we know, and even the National Institutes of Health is looking at this now and saying, we got a problem here because it's not getting solved. And so what we're going to do is maybe little by little see if we can change that. But our ethics are really huge. The research that we develop is absolutely critical. I don't want to be in the intensive care unit or in the coronary care unit or any place in the hospital and have my doctor depending on the research that's been done and find out that there was a conflict of interest by the people who published the paper. Because if I'm getting bad information, I'm liable to get a drug or some procedure or some process that's not going to be good for me and maybe make the illness that I have even that much worse. There's nothing like being compromised because you're sick in the hospital and you're toxic. and then taking something on top of that that is touted to be good but isn't, and then you have to live with that. I mean, that's the bottom, you know, of ethics in my book.
So the
it's
idea
not about compromising.
The idea of reducing the amount of company stock is just ridiculous. They shouldn't have any company stock if they're doing the research.
I think that what we need is people who are scientists, who are independent scientists, that are being paid by the NIH, by the people, okay, to do their research and have no outside ties with pharmaceutical companies, with technology companies, or anybody else, because unfortunately, it just doesn't work out right. The conflicts of interest sway what people think, what they do, what they publish, for a wide range of reasons. Some people just want to be famous. Some people just want a job that makes money, and their job happens to be doing research.
They want a job, period.
Well, yeah, but okay, so you're a researcher, and you're working for a pharmaceutical company, and you come up, and they spend $500 million on a study, and you show that this study actually sucked and that didn't have any great advantages. How long do you think you're going to be employed by that company? And how often are you going to be able to be doing more research? You're probably going to be out of luck. That's the real problem. So what do? You have to clean up our act. You have to evolve. It's not about working to change the system so that instead of $10,000 being the number, $5,000 is the number. We have to have different values. How do you teach those values? Very hard to do when you've got a culture that's allowed corruption to be a central part of it. And there's a lot of economic corruption in this country in every area. Business, law, medicine, science, religion, sport, it's everywhere. And that becomes the accepted way of doing things. And as long as we continue with that kind of thinking, it's not going to change. We value the almighty dollar. We don't value the almighty hug or the caring or the listening or the supporting or the giving. That's what needs to change. So to talk about making less of a bad thing, what we want to do, yeah, okay, that can fool some people. It's sort of like saying that we had health care reform, you know, after the last election. It wasn't any health reform of any kind except for economic. And the reform was minimal because the people with the money wanted to stop it. And so they spent $500 million lobbying in Congress to 535 Congress people, which means they spent almost $1 million per Congress person there. And of course, they got exactly what they wanted. There was no universal health care. There was not much of wellness and prevention and nutrition and natural therapies.
There was money in the pockets of the Congress people.
That's what that was. And so they bought them. And that was the deal of the century. They bought a $2.5 trillion industry for $500 million. I mean, that's a steal. And they're still going on just like they were. Something wrong with that picture. It needs to be stopped. We're the ones that have to stop it by not participating in it.
Senior citizens, you know, with chronic medical issues, they often leave the hospital without prescriptions for the medicines that they were getting for their illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there are lots of reasons that maybe they don't understand them, or they don't have enough money to buy them, or what have you. But this study shows that the drugs that were the most popular that people went home without were statins, blood thinners, and asthma inhalers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not so much in favor of statins in the first place, but I was thinking about blood thinners because sometimes people really do need blood thinners or they could end up with a stroke. And then asthma inhalers, I mean, those can have dangerous effects as well, but they're really necessary for an emergency.
Well, that's right.
So,
I mean, these are all things to take into account. The problem is we're still looking for solutions that come from blocking symptoms. And when people are in the hospital and they come out of the hospital, a lot of the times they don't even know what drugs they were in. They were sick when they were there. They didn't work out enough knowledge about what each drug did. They may not have the funds to be able to buy the drugs so that they can take them.
And they don't even know why they're taking them or what they're for. It's the blue pill and the pink pill.
There have been a lot of studies that show that. And so as long as we continue on the path we're on, there's no such thing as radical health care reform. If you want to learn about radical health care reform, get my book, A Return to Healing. It's about radical health care reform and the future of medicine. And it looks at all the issues that need to be looked at that have to do with medical education, medical research, the FDA, the CDC, the insurance industry, big pharma, and of course their death grip on Congress. You need to understand that. The book is A Return to Healing. Suggest you all get a copy because it's a great book.
Anyway, if you are elderly or you have an elder parent or grandparent, what have you, relative, make sure that there's some good communication that goes on before they're discharged from the hospital.
That's right. You may have to participate yourself. All right. We're at the end of the show, and we'd like to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news in health and take your healthcare questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.com. Radio and drsabuto.com from 3 to 4 Eastern Standard Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time. They'll also be archived on drsabuto.com.
And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to know, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
And have a wonderful week.